The coronavirus has changed a lot, even how we grieve. But now, with Phase 4 underway, funerals are getting back to normal.
We're anxious to be able to say yes a lot more to things, and I think families will be satisfied.
That's Alex Calvert. I'm Ryan Denham, and this is WGLT's The Leadoff.
Support for WGLT's The Leadoff comes from listeners like you. Join the community of news consumers who listen to this podcast and are willing to support it financially. Contribute at WGLT.org.
It's Tuesday, June 30th. Coming up, what you need to know to start your day. It's The Leadoff from WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media. Let's lead off with Bloomington Normal Funeral Homes being busy rescheduling dozens of memorial services. Coronavirus restrictions had limited gatherings to 10 people, but Phase 4 of Restore Illinois extends that limit up to 50. Dan Brady is co-owner of Kibler Brady Russman Funeral Home in Bloomington. He says families appreciate the opportunity for closure.
What this will bring back is the stability of being able to have more, especially immediate family, and close friends, which will be something that will be much more manageable and helpful to those families.
Bloomington Normal Funeral Home operators say more than 100 services had been postponed during the pandemic. Alex Calvert co-owns several funeral homes in central Illinois. He says nearly a dozen families have already rescheduled services for the summer or fall.
We're anxious to be able to say yes a lot more to things, and I think families will be satisfied.
Calvert says the funeral homes have to get creative to accommodate larger families and still observe social distancing. He says some had multiple graveside services and some hosted drive-through visitations. Dan Brady says he expects virtual funeral services to become more common in the future. Here's some other stories we're following in the WGLT newsroom. There's one new case of the coronavirus reported yesterday in McLean County. There's a person in their 70s. There are only 9 active cases of COVID-19 here right now. It's all people isolating at home. That's the lowest number in 2 months. High school teacher Patrick Lawler says he's running for Bloomington City Council in Ward 5. That's Jenny Painter's seat. She's still deciding whether to seek re-election in 2021. And Heartland Community College President Keith Cornell has joined more than 160 college presidents and chancellors in committing to full student voter registration and participation in all elections through the All-In Campus Democracy Challenge. See more on these stories at WGLT.org. Normal Community High School English teacher Christopher Belt is a self-described nerd. At a young age, he was into fantasy and comic books. He even wrote his own fantasy stories. Belt spoke with John Norton via Skype for the WGLT series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. He says even at that young age, the main characters in his original story were white.
I don't know. I remember in making that design choice for a young author's story I wrote for second grade, I felt like I understood my main character was supposed to be white.
Did you have an understanding of any repercussions that might have happened if you hadn't done that?
The story wouldn't be as well received or received by as many people.
What does that do to you internally to know that at a young age?
The constant inferiority complex battle begins is what happens. You're constantly coaching yourself up and reassuring yourself that you're good enough, you're worthwhile, you're deserving of admiration. I do feel like it's a lifelong battle with an inferiority complex.
How did you view systemic racism as you're getting older, and how did that affect how you either viewed yourself or how you dealt with things?
So mainly, first off, it's speech. I can speak the white folks' English very fluently. I know to code switch. And because of that, I'm oftentimes perceived as someone who's white. I get told that you act white all the time. And then, like, kind of my blackness isn't affirmed until, like, I play basketball. And they're like, oh, my God, you're so good at basketball. Okay, now you are black. Or if I get angry, then it's like, okay, now that you're mad, you're acting black. So I've always grown up with this contrast of the way that I am compared to the stereotypes. And then for me, it's always been about what about my experience has made me different than the stereotypes. Because it's not that the stereotypes are always true, but it's also they don't come from nowhere. So I've grown up in Normal, Illinois. This is not an urban city that's not an inner city. It's one of the nicest school districts in the state, always has been. Safe, affluent town. And I act like the other white kids who grew up here with access to all these resources and this privilege. So going through school, it was constantly people being baffled that I'm intelligent, that I'm articulate, that I'm not physically intimidating. That thrust me into a weird space identity-wise, because honestly, I would get the "you act white" from black people and white people. I feel like even black people are susceptible to the racist imagery we're fed all the time. So I felt like I had this dual inferiority complex and, I don't know, like a misfit complex. Like, I don't fit in completely with the blacks or the whites. I'm just in this weird in-between space. My first 3 years, I taught at Champaign Central, and in that school, it is predominantly black. It did have more of an inner city environment compared to what I'd grown up with at Normal. I mean, when I went through high school there, I was the only black kid or no more than three non-white kids in all my classes. But when I went to Champaign, I would have classes that had three white kids in them, and everyone else was non-black. So it was very different. But even in that environment, I had the black kids who, quote unquote, acted white would come to me and tell me how hurt they were by those statements and how they were thrust in this weird place. Excuse me. But what kind of threw me for a loop was I had Hispanic kids come and say that too, that they hated when people told them they acted white. And then I had a Korean kid say it.
Wow.
Sorry. So that that kind of gave me a greater sense of security with it. But it took until adulthood to get there.
So, Chris, if you don't mind, I don't want to presume to understand why you're reacting the way you are to this. Could you give us some insight into what's going through your mind?
You know, just having time to reflect on it and just talk to different people in my life, the moment feels surreal in that it seems like American society is collectively asking how I feel from my perspective in a way I thought would never happen. I never expected society to pivot like this so drastically, so quickly. And like I said, it's surreal to be like, whoa, people want to know what it's like to be black in America, like unfiltered, like, you know, straight from the source. So that is interesting. Some white people talk about to get rid of racism, we need to just not talk about it. And I feel like that's something that's just comforting for white people, because I've tried not talking about it, but it's literally unavoidable.
You can read and hear the entire conversation with Christopher Belt at WGLT.org/livingblack. That's it for today. Thanks for listening to The Leadoff. Support for this podcast comes from listeners like you. Contribute at WGLT.org.